Welcome to Subway Sports Talk.
Dan, clear of the closing doors, please.
All right, here we go, Subway Sports Talk. My name is Peter Kennedy, and I am your host, and oh my God. What a come-from-behind victory for the New York Knicks. 30 seconds of pure chaos that will go down in the history books as one of the most bizarre, most scary, yet satisfying wins in Knicks playoffs history, at least of this century. And here to talk it all through, of course, none other than Pat Boyle himself. We are going to be talking Knicks basically exclusively. We'll probably pop around some other items while we're going through it all. But of course, this is a Knicks leveled podcast, talking Brunson, talking Embiid, talking Maxey, talking the whole big picture as the Knicks are now up 2-0 in this series, heading to Philadelphia to take them on Thursday night. Pat Boyle, there were about 40 minutes after the game ended here, maybe 50 minutes after the game ended here. Have you calmed down yet?
I've tried, Pete. I think I've lost my voice. My voice will probably be gone. If not after this podcast, definitely by tomorrow. I mean, the most unbelievable Knicks win of my life, right? I mean, there's recency bias, but I don't know a tight game where there was never a lead larger than 10, where the Knicks trailed for the entire first 2.5 quarters, and then it's back and forth. They blow a lead in the fourth quarter. I think it's over. And then, like you said, we get the craziest 30 seconds of the last century, of this century of Knicks playoff basketball. One of the greatest finishes ever, an epic choke job from the Sixers, an 8-0 run in the final 27 seconds, Reggie Miller type stuff. I left speechless. I'm still speechless, so maybe I still haven't calmed down here 40 minutes after the game has ended. What a freaking win, dude. What a freaking win. A very sloppy performance again. Brunson, we're going to talk about Brunson.
Oh, yeah.
He has been awful, awful. The first two games, and we've showered him with flowers and roses and love all year long, and that's not going to change. But through the first two playoff games in this series, he has been abysmal, and yet the Knicks are up 2-0. I don't care. I don't want to hear about, well, Embiid's hurt. If he wasn't hurt, you wouldn't win. Never forget that the Knicks are playing the entire playoffs, however far they go, without Julius Randle. OG Anunoby is nowhere near 100% offensively with the elbow. You can see it in the way he shoots the ball. But man, Josh Hart has reached legend status as a New York Knick, and the Knicks are up 2-0 going back to Philly. Everything we could have asked for in terms of the results, we've gotten.
There's a big-time silver lining narrative that's kind of rolling through the Brunson struggles, and that is that with him playing as poorly as he has, they're still up 2-0. With Embiid and Maxey combining for 65-plus points already in both of the first two games, and the Knicks are still up 2-0. With Batum and Oubre giving Brunson fits, there are enough guys with enough firepower and enough other ways to make the game or impact the game, and they're still up 2-0. It feels good and it feels a little scary, but I think the one thing that stands out to me in like the big picture sense is that we are watching the same team we watched all year. And that does include Brunson struggling, but it includes all those other guys. You already mentioned Josh Hart. You got Mitchell Robinson coming in off different moments and making a huge impact. We have Hartenstein making a huge impact. Bojan Bogdanovic was kind of MIA for most of the game, missed some shots early. His two threes were enormous when he was in there and the end of the third quarter. I believe that was when they got their first lead of the game, was in the end of the third quarter. So McBride obviously had his moments, and of course Dante DiVincenzo. Again, we're going to get into the minutia of it all in a second here, and I'll lead you that way in a second. But I really do believe the crux of it for me is the Sixers are getting good or great offensive performances out of their big two. The Knicks are getting bad offensive performances out of their most relied upon scorer, and they are finding ways to win. It's the same Knicks team we watched all year with that hunger and that tenacity that is just unmatched. And I got to give some credit to Joel Embiid, man. It's clear he's playing through something and he's tough as nails. You have to throw him that. However, the efficiency is not there. He's not that agile on defense. So that's playing in the Knicks' favor a little bit as well. But that's no damn excuse for the Sixers, as you mentioned, Pat, with Randle being out and how poorly Brunson has played. So let's get into some of the specific details. Do you think we should start on Brunson and be a little bit more negative here to start this off? Or do you want to ride the high and talk about some of the other aspects that excited you tonight?
Yeah, let's get the negative out of the way, because
let's do it.
It is a miracle to me that Jalen Brunson is having a worse playoff performance so far than 2021 Julius Randle against the Hawks. Like, the shooting numbers, Julius Randle shot 30% from the field. Brunson's what, 15 of 55? 16 of 55 so far through the first two games. Like, he is shooting this basically the same amount of percentage. What's 16 divided by 55? I have to look at the exact numbers through the first two games.
Not very good.
29% if that's true. So, I mean, he's barely sniffing 30% if that. He's missing the same shots he has made all year. He's not getting the fouls. He's not going to get the foul calls, right? He's not going to get the foul calls, so that's not going to change. He's not going to all of a sudden start going to the free throw line 8, 9, 10 times a game. He's missing mid-range shots. He's getting to his spot and missing. The first three he hit was that prayer three that started that unbelievable sequence where it hits the front rim and we get a lucky-ass bounce to start that entire magical sequence. He has been horrible. He's been horrible, and give Nick Nurse and the Sixers credit. They have defended him incredibly well. I did not think that 38-year-old Kyle Lowry would be able to lock him down as well as he has, along with Tyrese Maxey, the way that they have shadowed him off the pick and roll, where they have let Joel Embiid or whoever the big is on the floor kind of go drop coverage and then have Maxey or Lowry kind of just follow him from behind and try to swipe the ball away or block it from behind. He's been horrible. Right, dude, like, for a guy that has had one of the greatest Knicks seasons in franchise history, fourth leading scorer in the NBA this year, he's going to be second team all NBA. For him to play that bad is so shocking. And you can see his confidence was so low towards the end of that game, where he was passing up looks that he would normally take, where he's locked in. You know he's going to deliver. He's going to deliver daggers. He's going to be an assassin. He's passing them up, and when he is shooting, he's not even close. I mean, he had an air ball in that fourth quarter where it looked like, you know, it was on target. And I'm like, all right, bang, let's go. He's locked in. Didn't even hit the rim. So right.
The legs are off.
Yeah, you're right. Everything is off right now about him. He's still facilitating, right? I mean, he finished with how many assists in this game and so many of those in that second half to Isaiah Hartenstein. Brunson finished with 6 assists. And he still ended up being a +3, but man, like 8 for 29 in game two. It's shocking how bad he's been. And as much as I'd love to say with confidence, it's the worst two games he's played all year, he's going to turn it around. Man, if I'm being completely honest, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that Brunson is going to, over the next 2, 3, 4 games, however long this series ends up going, that he is all of a sudden just going to flip a switch and these two games are going to be an anomaly. I'm not sure that's going to happen.
So let me go through a few things that you just said here. So I'll get to what's going to come up in the next couple of games. But just to go back, right, when I was watching this game and I'm seeing the shooting struggles still remaining for Jalen Brunson, my first thought was it's time for him to start playing playmaker, right? Like, you see a lot of other point guards put up gaudy assist numbers all throughout the year. It's not really Brunson's game to put up 12 assists for, you know, 4 out of 5 games. It's just not kind of how he plays the game. He moves the ball. He's a ball stopper occasionally, but he moves the ball. He gets his 6 or 7 assists. That's what he does. When the shot is not falling, you have to start looking for your guys. And as soon as that second half started and he found Isaiah Hartenstein underneath for a wide open dunk because Embiid was kind of caught in between and couldn't recover, it was imperative that was so important for him to make sure that's part of his game, even when the shot's not falling. He can create the pressure on the defense and set up his other guys. That has to happen. And right now, and we had some conversations in our group chat, Pat, and I know it's been all over Twitter and people are saying it left and right. I got 2 different marks in 2 different group chats calling Brunson a fraud, saying he's not a top 5 player, and all this stuff. And to the one point, is Brunson a top 5 player in the NBA right now? No, he's not. Did he have a top 5 season? Yes, he did. I'd say 5 or 6 regular season this year. Those are 2 different things. But the chirpers come out. When you hit the pinnacle that Brunson hit this year and get into the MVP voting conversation, not to win it, but to get those 3rd, 4th, 5th place votes, you now become judged differently and critiqued more harshly. And now's the time where we didn't think there was another level for Brunson to go. There is, because when the shot's not falling, he has to do more stuff. He has to get more guys better looks. There's too many other point guards who do it consistently. It's not always his bread and butter, but he has to make it his bread and butter to take another step up, right? When you hit that pinnacle, when you get in the conversation of, oh, who should get the fourth place vote? Should it be Brunson, Tatum, Giannis? Those types of people who we're talking about in the same conversation, guess what? You got to be critiqued like those guys too. And when Tatum doesn't finish a fourth quarter strong, he gets crapped on. Meanwhile, everyone knows damn well he's a top seven player in the NBA. So Brunson's there. And that's a good thing that he's going to get that critique. He has to step up and change the game a little bit. Now, moving to the other stuff and the history of Brunson in the playoffs, I think it's really easy to just think of the great moments of Jalen Brunson in the playoffs for the New York Knicks so far. Like some of the big wins against Miami before they went down, the big wins against Cleveland in the first round last year, where he just played fantastic. However, Pat, this is not new for him to have some iffy games here in the playoffs. So last year alone, he had two games against Cleveland. One was a loss and one was a win. 5-for-17 and 1-for-8 from three. And then the final game, which was a win, he went 8-for-22, which is 36%. The first one was 29%. And 2-for-6 from three, only getting to the free throw line five times in that game, right? And then against Miami, he had some great shooting games, 52%, 54%, 63% in the game where they finally got kicked out in game six. But in between those, he had another stinker, 35%, 7-of-20. What did he do? He bounced back. He kept playing his game. He stayed true. He got back to 47%, 54% in those future games. So I don't think it's unrealistic to believe that he can't turn it around going to Philly on Thursday and Sunday coming up here. And in fact, it's actually necessary, because the way the role players just played in these last two games, you can't bank on that again. You can't bank on 8-of-16 for Josh Hart in the next two games in Philadelphia. You just can't. So now Brunson, rightfully criticized for these last two games, rightfully praised for the incredible performance he had in this regular season. Now it's time to turn the page, get your teammates involved, keep taking the shots you're supposed to take, and he has to turn it around. I believe he will.
Okay. I'm glad that you've got optimism and confidence. He struggled against the Sixers all year. That's the thing.
Yes.
Right? He struggled every
time.
No
great games against the Sixers.
No, he struggled every time they've played him. So even though I'm not entirely confident that all of a sudden he's going to flip a switch, and like you said, you know, after he had a 7-for-20 game last year against the Heat, he finished the series 32 points, 38 points, 41 points, and he almost single-handedly carried the Knicks to staying in that series. I am confident that the Knicks are still going to win this series. I've been confident all along. I'm confident the Knicks win in 5 or 6. And then if we're looking at a second-round matchup, whether it's Milwaukee or Indiana, I'm still confident then that Jalen Brunson could still be the best player in those series and that he could still ball out in those series. But I'm a little less confident than you. I'm a lot less confident that he is going to be able to turn it around in this series. I think that, you know, again, not making excuses, because again, like I said, Randle's out for the entire playoffs. OG's not 100%. But I think our saving grace is going to be Embiid, you know, basically limping through the finish line in these two games that he has, and knowing he's not going to be 100% at any point in this series, that could be the saving grace for Brunson and the Knicks here.
And now, question, when you mentioned before, I think one of the big things here that's making it tough on him is really not even Lowry and Maxey. I think the Oubre-Batum defensive matchup there, it throws this different length at him. And now, this is just a random question, like weirdly putting you on the spot. Do you remember, like off the top of your head, were teams throwing their big guys like that, like their wings at him during the regular season? I feel like I can't really picture a lot of wings guarding him for like long stretches. I felt like Batum was on him a lot, and I was shocked how much he was moving and how well he was moving with them.
He was. And that's a great point that you made. There was, and I remember one point, I'm like, it's Nick fucking Batum. Like, get past him. He's like 50 years old and he can't defend, but he did a good job.
Shout out Big Zoo, who texted me, I fucking hate Nick Batum.
Yeah. And honestly, and Pete, you know, I so lost in all the chaos, and I, you know, playing all back the mental images and the highlights in my head of all the times Lowry and Maxey have done a good job. And I did forget that, yeah, Batum guarded him, I think, for most of that second half. Now that I'm remembering it, and I remember literally yelling out loud, it's It's Nick effing Batum. Let's go. And, you know, you ask a great question. I don't recall many times where teams threw their wings, their threes or their fours at Brunson rather than their guards. And it's been a good strategy from Nick Nurse. He's mixed it up, and he's finished with, I think, Batum guarding Brunson now for the first two games. And I'm just trying to think back too, to last year in the playoffs, who primarily guarded him in the Cleveland series. And I think it was the combination of Garland and Mitchell. I don't remember.
Right. They didn't have a guy. I think they tried Okoro, but he couldn't hang on offense. Like, it just, they didn't have the guys. They didn't have the horses. And I think though, and I'll start to jump in here, but I think what was such a strength for them with Batum and Oubre guarding Brunson is also quite a weakness for them on offense. Like, Batum is at this point a catch and shoot guy. That's all he's bringing to the table on offense. He'll make the right pass, but he'll hit some threes. Oubre has looked a little bit lost offensively. Like, he's not getting to the rim the way he does there in the regular season. They've done a great job with the length on him. And Lowry, what a vintage Lowry game, just being a pest. I think Clyde used the word pugnacious about four times in 3 minutes, which was fantastic to hear. But that, like, that whole thing with the Sixers' balance of offense and defense, with Embiid not exactly being efficient, and we'll get to them in a second, like, Batum and Oubre not doing much on offense, it almost net neutrals how well they made or how well they played against Brunson.
Yeah, excellent point. They took 84 shots tonight, the Sixers. Embiid and Maxey took 51 of them. They scored 69 of their 101 points. Oubre scored 4 points. Lowry scored 8 points.
Who was their third leading scorer? Who
Tobias
was it?
Tobias Harris had 10.
Tobias. Who was the most forgetful shots of all, the whole game? Like, you, of the, now of that you said Tobias career. Harris, I'm picturing like two or three corner threes that he made that didn't even look like they were going in. They went in and, like, whatever. He gets some rebounds. I don't know. Tobias Harris, man, what an anomaly. Like, and it goes to show the difference too of, like, Embiid wasn't efficient, but he hit these shots that were super important, and they came in moments where it was like the balance is kind of teetering and they needed a bucket, and Embiid hits the N1 from the elbow extended, or he gets to the line, whatever he's doing. Like, Tobias Harris just hits like these shots, and we've done it for like 8 years of playoffs games now where it's just irrelevant. Now, like, I forgot that he even existed.
Yeah. That's his entire career. Like, if you ask Sixers fans, who is the first player you want to get rid of? It's Tobias Harris. Like, he's a scrub. He's a bona fide scrub, right? He is the most irrelevant, like, near all-star, you know? I guess, could you even call him that anymore? Maybe five, six years ago, you could.
His best year with the Clippers, right? He almost made an all-star team. I thought Danilo Gallinari was more important to that Clippers team, too, nonetheless.
Yeah. He sucks. So
it's net neutral. It really is.
Yeah.
And like, it's the definition of net neutral. If you're on like a highway with like a little bit of a downhill, maybe you're driving to the mountains and you're just like, yeah, I could just put this in neutral and coast. Like, that's just Tobias Harris. Like, he's just coasting out there, getting some cardio and some rebounds.
Yeah. You know, the Brunson, I agree with you 100% on what you said, how the Sixers have attacked defensively and how, like you said, then they've gotten nothing offensively out of Oubre and Lowry for the most part. They just, you know, they're making greedy plays, and they've accomplished their number one mission through two games. They've made Jalen Brunson look so normal. And yet the Knicks have eked out two wins. And, you know, like we said, that's who this team has been all year. That's why we're so confident that the Knicks were going to win this, are going to win this series, and emphatically. But I did not picture them. I picture them winning games like this. I just didn't picture Jalen Brunson playing awful through it. You know what I'm saying? Like, we picture them winning gritty games, getting those second chances, rebounds, dominating the glass in game one like they did, winning games that, you know, it's the first to 100 wins it. Like, we pictured all that. I just didn't picture Brunson basically shooting 16 for 56 through the first two games.
Yeah. And you're 100% right. And now I think, like, so we're talking from a Knicks perspective for the most part here. From a Sixers perspective, how demoralizing must it be to see Maxey have a fantastic game after you hear about him being sick or whatever, and be just battling through and playing, you know, not to Embiid standards. And I'll get to some numbers here in a minute on Embiid, but they're doing their job. And then you see Brunson just struggling and struggling, and you still don't get the dub. So it's got to be demoralizing for them, which leads me now to my question, Pat. With the Joel Embiid front, where do you stand? How do you calculate mentally what is happening to him in the playoffs? Because now at this point, and the series is not over. Let's not act like it's over. There's a lot of series to be played. No series is over until someone wins on the road, right? We know the old adage. But how are you kind of tying up what's happening with Joel Embiid here, where it's now been two playoffs in a row, plus this one, which is only two games in, where the numbers just don't look like they do in the regular season from an efficiency standpoint and some of the other stuff, and him being hurt constantly?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, in terms of a solution for Philly and for Embiid, they have to continue to jump out to big leads early, like they've done the first two games. The Knicks have looked horrible in the first quarter, 18 points in the first quarter in this game too, and got out to a big deficit early in game one. Got outscored 34-25 in the first quarter, and then they crushed them in the second. Embiid has to take over the beginning of games because he's not 100% to begin with. He's like 70 to 80%. And I remember hearing, them say on the broadcast that he said he feels 70 to 80%. But in the fourth quarter, these first two games, he's like 50%. Like, he's a shell of himself in the fourth quarter down the stretch. Mitchell Robinson locked him down in the fourth quarter in game one. He couldn't hit those shots, and he took 9 threes in game two tonight, which tells you everything you didn't know about. He can't be physical down low like he normally is. So they need him to have, I think he had, 14, 15 points in the first quarter tonight, 15 of his 34 points, and he dominated the first half. That's all they can hope for, is that he gives them everything he can in the first half, and then they have to have Tyrese Maxey be the closer for them. That's the only chance they have, because Embiid, like, to rely on Embiid to give you his level of play down the stretch, it's unrealistic. And the Knicks are too good defensively too to let it happen to a 50% Joel Embiid in the final 6, 7, 8 minutes of a game. And I think for him, it's so tough because, you know, there was plays that Deuce McBride steal, which he ultimately blows the layup on, where Embiid, like, you saw him, like, try to kick it into high gear, and he's like, I can't do it. He basically jogged after him. Plays like that, he's not given 100%, but he knows that offensively still he can hit those. I mean, he had a couple of unbelievable turnaround fadeaway mid-range jumpers. Like,
the one on Hartenstein with the N1.
Yep, he's going to hit those shots. As limited as he is, he still has an unbelievable stroke. He's going to hit those. You know, fortunately, too, for the Knicks, too, he went 2 of 9 for deep. If he goes 4 of 9, which he definitely can, it's a much different ball game. So it's they're definitely in between a rock and a hard place when it comes to Embiid. And, like, he's not going to sit out a game. Like, if it was going to happen, it would have been on the road. He's going to give everything he has. It's not going to be 100%. He's still going to put up 34-10-6. Like, he's still going to put up those numbers. But the fourth quarter, the Knicks are never going to be out of a game in this series. Even if they're down 10 with 8 minutes left, they're not out of a game, because Embiid is limping to the finish line. And I think that gives a lot of confidence to the Knicks. And like you said, it makes it that much more of a demoralizing loss in game two for the Sixers, because they had that game, man. They had it. They stayed in there. The Knicks fought back, took a lead. We're up by 8 as much at one point. We'll talk about your guy, you know, Bojan Bogey, hitting some big threes for them off the bench. I think he missed his last 3 shots of the game, which was, you know, pretty shitty to see. But the Sixers stood in there. They got the lead back. It looked like they were going to win. And I'm already saying, man, 1-1 going back to game 3. Like, Embiid's going to be limited in every game, and they still found a way to steal this. And then they just totally choke and collapse. So it just makes it that much more of a crushing loss for them.
Yeah, and I'll do the same thing I did with Brunson here with Joel Embiid. But first and foremost, Pat, how many games do you think it's been since he shot 50% in a playoff game?
Embiid?
For Embiid, yeah.
So how many games in a row has he failed to
shoot? Has he played that he hasn't shot 50% from the, yeah. Just take a guess of it, obviously, whatever.
Well, I'm going to say he probably hit 50% in at least 2 of the 4 games where they dominated the Nets last year. So going back to the second round of last year and these playoffs, I'm going to say probably 5 games in a row where he's failed to shoot 50%.
10 games, but you were right. So your thought process was correct. He had a 54% game against Brooklyn in game 2 last year in the first round. Then he went 38%, 44, 47, 42, 43, 47, 27. And then this, in this Knicks series now in 2024, 36% in game one. And then, of course, tonight, I don't know what the number is off the top of my head, but 12 for 29, another game well under 50%. So this is now a thing here, and this is why I try to tread lightly with this. You know, Pat, like, we try to be nuanced. We're not on the hot take road right now. We're on a podcast where we're talking for 45 minutes or so. I try to be nuanced because Embiid is insane. Where Jalen Brunson is debatably the fifth best player in the NBA to the 25th best player in the NBA, somewhere in the middle of that, Joel Embiid is undoubtedly a top five player in the NBA in most people's eyes, and I think he deserves that. However, this is now becoming a trend, and whether it's the injuries or his health or whatever it may be, it is truly a trend. And when I did my season series preview on Subway Sports Talk just earlier, you know, last or in the middle of last week, this was my big point here. Like, this guy's coming into the playoffs again compromised. Again, now off 2 years in a row of poor performances in the playoffs. Like, his true shooting percentage just has plummeted 2 years in a row in the playoffs. He hasn't had a playoff to stack up to his regular season numbers since Ben Simmons was on the Philadelphia 76ers. And that's not like hyperbole. It's not me trying to trash Embiid. It's just the fact of the matter. It's injury. It's a little bit of turnover issue. It's a little bit of defenses keying up on him. Maybe a little bit of less calls to the free throw line. He still gets a good bit of them. It's becoming a thing now, Pat, and he's getting crap for it 100%. At this point, he's no different from James Harden right now. And Harden's was more of a mental situation. Maybe it was a little bit more of a not bright enough or too bright of lights. But for Joel Embiid, we're two playoffs in a row and halfway through a series against the Knicks where this guy can't even shoot 50% when he consistently is over 55 in the regular season. It's becoming a trend. And as much as I hate to say it, because he's so damn talented and it's obvious, it's real. And it's not Knicks fans crapping on Embiid. It's not Jokic fans saying Jokic is better. It's just true that Embiid has not lived up to his regular season status in the playoffs since Ben Simmons was on the Sixers.
Yeah, when you just compared him to James Harden, my eyes, you know, nearly popped out of my head. But it's hard to disagree, because I think we all say if he's healthy, he's like the Sixers probably are in an NBA Finals by now. Maybe they have a title, but he never is. He never is.
Yeah.
And like, that can't be a crutch when it's every single year. It can't be. Like, that's who he is. Who he is as a player. And you know, you hear the feels so bad for Embiid. Guys just never healthy, but he guts it out and he grits it out. Like, all right, it's cool. Like hang that as a banner in Wells Fargo Arena, whatever the hell that freaking building is called. Embiid gutted out playoffs. We got close. Like, we got to a game 7 last year against the Celtics, and then Jason Tatum absolutely bent us over. So
in two games in which James Harden was instrumental in two of those three wins against the Celtics last year. Just saying. I know Harden blew it in the other games, but without Harden, they also probably don't win two of those three games. But whatever. I digress. I know I've stan James Harden for years. I don't really do it anymore. But again, like, in this situation, it's getting more difficult. Like, this guy hasn't got out of a second round. They've been top three seeds. They've been number one seeds. It's not like they've been undermanned. They've had great teams. And literally since Ben Simmons, who can't even play basketball anymore, was on the Sixers, he hasn't hit expectations. And even still that year, they fell short. Not due to him. He was fantastic in that playoffs. They still fell short. Ben, so I don't know.
Ben was the scapegoat against the Atlanta Hawks. That was the best chance they ever had of winning an NBA championship. Really no more. Nobody else to scapegoat at this point than to point the finger at Joel.
Yeah. And frankly, like, listen, again, it's 2-0. They're going back to Philly. This series is not over, but there's a trend. There's a trend. And maybe there's a trend for Brunson brewing as well, that he can't handle bigger defenders. Maybe that's a thing that's going to happen too. And we'll cross that bridge when we get there, when it becomes a trend. But right now it's just been two games and the Knicks are on top. But all right. Subway Sports Talk, Pete Kennedy, Pat Boyle. Let's get back to the Knicks side here for a second, Pat, because I want to ask you a question about the two people who have been tasked with stopping Joel Embiid, or not stopping him, because again, even with his lack of efficiency, my man's putting up 30 plus and he's still a beast, right? But Mitchell Robinson and Isaiah Hartenstein tag teaming the center position, going up against Joel Embiid, trying to make his life difficult, trying to make the shots more difficult. has either one of them jumped out to you as better than the other, or are you appreciative of what they both bring to the table?
I'm appreciative of what they've both brought to the table. And I'm appreciative of Tibbs, of Tom Thibodeau, and the way that he didn't just say, all right, well, first of all, I'm fired up for Tibbs, you know, fucking big brain genius type stuff. In game one, rides with Mitch to close the game, where we've all said over the last 3-4 months here, wow, Hartenstein, pound for pound, better player, better center than Mitchell Robinson. Like, Mitch lost his spot when he got hurt. Hartenstein's the dude for the Knicks. He's going to be starting. He's going to be playing big time minutes. And it was Mitch who was the hero defensively in game one, closed the game, locked down Embiid. Embiid in the fourth quarter in game one, 0-for-5 from the field, no rebounds and a -5. And then for Tibbs to realize that, look, Brunson's not getting it done. We need some offense. We need to have a little bit more offensively minded team. Rolls with Hartenstein 30 minutes over Mitchell Robinson, 18 minutes in game two. Hartenstein closes out the final 6 minutes, gives you enough defensively, comes up with the biggest monster offensive rebound that set up that DiVincenzo game winning three. And he's just like so much better offensively than Mitchell Robinson. The floater that we've fallen in love with all year, the little left-handed hook shot floater. He goes 7 of 8 tonight from the field. Comes down with 8 rebounds, 4 assists. He's a damn good passer himself. He's made some incredible dimes this year. And he gets 3 blocks. And he slowed down Embiid enough to once again make him uncomfortable and make him inefficient and largely ineffective in that fourth quarter. So Mitch was the hero in the big man spot in game one. Hartenstein was the hero in the five in game two. I think they have both collectively done a tremendous job through two games so far. And Tibbs, you know, A plus to have the wherewithal to say, look, we need a little bit more offense right now down the stretch here in this fourth quarter with JB not shooting well at all and having a very abysmal game and OG not giving us much from deep. I need some easy buckets out of Hartenstein. Off the assists, off the feeds from Jalen Brunson, and you got it. So they've been as good as each other. It's 50-50 for me because they've both effectively handled Embiid down the stretch in each game, and Hartenstein made some huge offensive plays in game two.
And I say A-plus to you as well because I asked you a question about Mitchell Robinson, Isaiah Hartenstein, and you just so aptly put it to Tibbs, which I think is the key point here. You're right, and I didn't even really think about that. More so than it being in front of my face that Mitch closed one and Hartenstein closed two, because that's not an easy decision, right? Like we all talk about, oh, who's going to start? It's obviously clear that Hartenstein's in the starting lineup and that is what it is. But in the playoffs, you see Mitch go in and do exactly what he did against Cleveland last year in game one. You're like, all right, Mitch is the closer. And guess what? Tibbs on a fly, right? Like you said, and so profoundly put there, they needed offense. They needed some juice on that other side of the ball, and Hartenstein was doing that in the third quarter. He was a big part of their run. Obviously, no bigger defensive play than the block on Maxey to close that fourth quarter there, and that was just a outstanding performance by the two-headed monster centers of Mitchell Robinson and Isaiah Hartenstein. Creates so much difficulties for other team to get to the rim consistently, to box out consistently. It's just a bore to try to get rebounds when those two guys are on the court. And when they fly up for rebounds, they look like they're 7'8". I mean, it's ridiculous how large Mitchell Robinson looks when he's on the offensive glass. I get so hyped up when that man's in the game just because of that alone. But on the other side, when we're not talking about two giants, we're talking about an average-sized NBA player, give or take, and we're talking about Josh Hart. Does this man have to practice ever again, Pat? Does he just have free reign to not care about practice now for the rest of his Knicks career? Because it came out that he's the worst practice player Isaiah Hartenstein's ever seen. Tibbs just cracked up basically at the question about Josh Hart's practice, yet his stamina is through the roof playing 48 minutes on the regular, grabbing rebounds like he's 6'11". I don't know what to say about this man with Josh Hart. He has been the MVP so far in this playoff, and largely he's been the engine that has run this team throughout the second half.
Yeah, absolutely. He's, like I said to start the podcast, Pete, he's hit legend status. He hit legend status when he came here last year. rejuvenating this team, sparking this team right away, coming up with some big time performances. And then just the way, man, that he has been run into the ground by Tibbs over the final 3 months of this season. Need you to play 45 minutes. Need you to play 48 minutes. Need you to play make. Need you to continue to be the best undersized rebounder in the NBA. 6'4", right? They have Hart listed at. Or is he 6'6"? Either way, you know, he's in an ocean of bigs.
He ain't that big.
He's in an ocean of bigs every night, regular season, postseason. Yeah, he's 6'4". So think about that. He is like, and he's a 3 or a 4. He's undersized, and yet he snatches 15 rebounds tonight. He rips off, what, 6 triple-doubles in the span of the final 25, 30 games of the year, having to play 48 minutes. What this man has done for this team, not only since he got here last year, and remember, I was crushing him at least for the first 2 months of the season because he was pretty average, pretty mediocre, and I was like, damn, he got paid. We got the best of Josh Hart already. And man, has he fucking proved me wrong. He has put together an unbelievable last 2 months here, playing almost every single minute of every single game and running off triple doubles. A couple of games where he dropped 25, 30 points where the Knicks needed offense. They have desperately needed offense over these first two games. He hits monster threes. I think 3 fourth quarter threes in game one and some wacky looking shots too, like some pull up threes that he's hit have had no business of going in. The one where he flails the legs out at the in the closing minutes of game one, and again rips down 15 rebounds tonight like it's nothing. Plays every single second of the game tonight in game two. He's hit legend status, man. We are forever indebted to Josh Hart. There's not enough words to do justice what he has done through the first two games. If not for Josh Hart, the Knicks are down 0-2. We've praised Hartenstein. We've praised Mitch. We haven't praised Deuce McBride yet on the pod. We will. But the Knicks are down 0-2. Absolutely 100%. If not for Josh Hart, and he could be the worst practice player in the world, I don't care. If he's drinking his wife's breast milk, like, just keep doing it. Keep doing it. I need to start drinking it because it's incredible to see his stamina, his toughness, and his playmaking abilities, and then the scoring on top of it when he'd never been known as a scorer.
Yeah, and the shooting, man. I mean, all season long, I'm watching him play, and I'm like, he's wide open. Like, what do you – just take the shots, Josh. Like, no one's going to care if you're shooting 30% from three for the flow of the offense. Like, you got to take them. And he just was refusing to shoot threes for a large portion of the season. And then game one of the playoffs, like, boom, 4-3. Like, what happened? Now he could shoot? Like, I don't know if he's just feeling the juice and it's just working for him right now. Part of it, I thought through the regular season that he was putting so much effort into rebounding, running the floor, and attacking the rim that he didn't have the legs to shoot the ball. Maybe the adrenaline of the playoffs is balancing that out for him because he's shooting the ball pretty well. His jumpers look better now than it ever has as a Knick. So I don't know if the shooting's going to withstand here for Josh Hart, but it doesn't even matter at this point for all the other stuff that he brings to the table. It's truly unbelievable.
And bro, like, you forget about this too, because he's still played almost every single minute of every game. But he had a sprained wrist for like the last 2 weeks of the regular season. And I remember at one point I was like, I'm going to bet Josh Hart under threes as long as I can here. And he literally said, he's like, I can't get the ball to the rim because my wrist is kind of banged up right now. He had a stretch from March 31st to April 11th. So like the last 7 of 10 games of the regular season where he hit either 0 or 1 threes. And there was 4 straight games where he hit 0 threes and 3 straight where he didn't even shoot a 3. And remember that one game was the Kings, that incredible comeback win against the Kings where he went 31-9-8 without hitting a 3-pointer. So like he played with a banged up wrist for basically the last 2 weeks of the season too. And for him to be doing all this now, it's just tremendous. And they continue to sag off him and leave him open. Please keep doing it. And he could have hit that one big three and they left him open and he missed it. And I was like, fuck, that's it. And then nope, he still just comes back to make incredible plays. I mean, I love him. I love him.
Yeah, it's special stuff, man. It really is. Let's talk about the shooters real quick. Cause right now if you think about the shooters on the New York Knicks, it's not OG Anunoby at the moment, at least. He'll hit a couple, but he's not hitting them like he was when he was, you know, primed up in January with the New York Knicks. It's Dante DiVincenzo, it's Deuce McBride, and it's a little bit of sprinkle of my guy, Bojan Bogdanovic. Now, let's start with Dante. He deserves it. You know, he hit the biggest shot of the night, and we haven't really spoken about him yet. A semi, I don't know what the right word is. It's not like an average game for Dante DiVincenzo, but an unassuming, you know, quality performance from Dante. He didn't have like huge, huge moments. It didn't feel like he was swinging the game in crazy ways like he can. But then again, end of the game, he gets two chances at it. He hits the second one. Enormous win. I mean, what he's bringing to the offense and has brought to the offense this entire season, especially once the injuries took place, has been special. And it's something that even if you liked Dante when he was with Milwaukee or Golden State, you didn't think he had this in his bag. You know, how important is he to the Knicks' success?
Yeah, I mean, he hit the third most threes in the NBA this year behind Steph Curry and Luka Doncic. And
says all you need to know.
Yeah, and tonight, I think he did so much outside of just shooting, and a little surprising, too, that he wasn't on the floor. Like, Tibbs finally put him back on the floor, I think, with, like, 5 minutes left. He had Deuce and Jalen out there at the same time. I'm like, we can't, you know, we can't, like, he went with the offensive approach with Hartenstein, but, you know, like, I thought we needed Dante on the floor. He only took 10 shots. He only took 8 threes. He hit 4 of them. But, like, in the first quarter, I was getting on Tibbs because Devo barely even grazed the rim on his first 2 threes. And then, you know, the Knicks were struggling in the first quarter and Tibbs took him out. I thought that was a point where you needed to adjust, play Dante the entire first quarter because you needed his offense. He finished with 19 points, 4 of 8 from deep. But I thought he defended Tyrese Maxey really well. His effort was incredible down the stretch. He gets Embiid teed up, so he's got a little shithousery in him. You know, he mixed it up tonight. He made some tough plays. He had a couple good steals. Here's the thing for Dante DiVincenzo. He was pretty poor as well in game one. He was much better in game two. I think he's going to have a monster game three. I think on the road, the Knicks are going to have to rely a little bit more on the three ball because they shot 11 of 33 tonight. They're going to need the three. Like on the road, that's how you take the crowd out of it. That's how you get momentum on your side. Dante DiVincenzo on the road this year, Pete, shot 47% from the field, only 42% from the field at home, 43% from deep on the road the entire regular season, only 38% from three. He has shot the ball better on the road. I think they have to rely on him. I think he needs to shoot 12 or 13 threes in game three. I think he's due for a monster, monster performance. If the Knicks go up 3-0, I'm predicting it's going to be because of Dante DiVincenzo. I think he has a 30-point performance in him. Hopefully they revolve the offense a little bit more around him. Because if he's hitting threes, that opens things up for Brunson.
Everything starts working better. Absolutely. And calling your shot on Dante DiVincenzo, I like that. And you're right, he did have to run around a lot on D, which makes it more difficult. And I think with Dante and McBride and a little bit of everybody in that first quarter when they started so poorly, they were like a little too pumped, right? McBride came in off the bench, gets a pretty decent look from three and shoots it right over the rim, like airballed it because he was just so amped. And he played so damn good in game one. Felt like he hit every shot he took, which obviously wasn't true, but it felt like that. And then his first shot in game two is just like, oh, dude, you got to chill out. Like, you got too much juice on the deuce right now. And then he got going a little bit, did Deuce McBride. He's been fantastic, even in game two where he didn't score the way he did in game one, which you're not going to expect two in a row from Deuce like that. He just brings so much to the table. I do want to ask you, though, Pat, about Bojan Bogdanovic, something that you and I disagreed with from the get-go of the trade and then kind of as the season progressed. Like, I was kind of holding out hope. You were not really feeling it on Bojan. It's not like he's lit up the world in the playoffs here, but do you feel like he's found a more comforting role for himself in the playoffs here? And do you feel like that shooting is bringing something to the table here for the Knicks?
Yeah, yes and no. You know, he had 13 in game one, but he was what, 3 of 9 from the field? And then tonight he came in and I feel like he hit 2 threes in a row, or it felt like it. It felt like I saw both of his threes in like succession. And then, like I said, I think he then missed his last 3 threes that he took of the game in game two tonight. So I still think there's a lot more room and a lot more potential for him. He only played 12 minutes tonight. I think he played 28 minutes or 25 minutes in game one. So Tibbs definitely used him less. That's another guy. You know, I'm hoping for a monster game from Dante from three in game three, but it can easily be Boyan as well. Like, you know, the Sixers are not going to pay a ton of attention to him. And I feel like most of his shots tonight, where he had a decent amount of space and just missed shots that he needs to be making. Like, if we think the Knicks have a chance to get to the NBA Finals this year, and I do, you know I do. I've said it here. I've said it The Fan. I've said it BetQL. Like, the Knicks have to have assassins like Bojan Bogdanović hurt teams, because on the floor, if you have Brunson and Deuce, Brunson, OG, and Hart, or Brunson, DiVincenzo, and Hart, and Bojan Bogdanović is like the fourth scorer on the floor, but we know how lethal he can be from deep. Like, that is how the Knicks are really going to hurt teams. That is how the Knicks have a chance to beat the Boston Celtics. So I still need to see more out of him. It was nice to see him hit a couple threes, but outside of that, he really didn't do much. You need him to make those shots count. You need him to really hurt teams when he gets open looks, because he's going to get them.
Yeah, he's 5-for-12 on the series right now from three, 41%. And that's about right? He had a couple misses, like you mentioned, in this game here. Those two threes were huge, especially the first one he hit. It was like a fadeaway contested from the far wing on the TV screen. And I was like, oh my God, like the beautiful arc, swish, nothing but net. And it was like, oh my God, is this going to get him going? And then he hit one more right after that. And you're like, wow, Bojan might just take over. And then he missed another shot or two. Didn't quite happen. However, it was important. And I think that the key to this Knicks team is almost like the Bojan Bogdanović thing in a nutshell here. He might only have one game in a series that he goes off for five threes. That might be all it takes for him. We saw Deuce do it in game one. We've seen Josh do it twice now. You know, Dante's still due for a 6 3-point game at some point in this series or beyond that if they make it that far. So I do feel the energy around him when he's on the court, Pat, is interesting to me. I almost feel like when he's out there, the Knicks are like, yo, we need you. Come on, like, do something. And I don't know if he's fit. Like, he's got it fluid yet, if that makes sense. Like, he comes in for 15 minutes a game, and when he's out there, they're like, yo, roll off a screen and shoot this. And I don't think it's helped him get into a rhythm, because he's been so used to in his career playing 25, 30 minutes a game, being a guy who gets 15, 16 shots a game. And that's not who he is on this team. And that was a big reason why he struggled so far. But he has to figure it out, because he's not going to play 25 minutes a game. He might get 25 minutes a game, you know, once a series or twice a series if he's lucky. So he's got to figure that out. But if he hits those, you know, if he hits his three threes a game, I think you're going to feel like his impact is bigger than it probably is from a box score perspective. And I'm holding out hope on that front. I'm waiting for that one game where he kind of goes nuclear, but it has not happened just yet. But I'm just curious to see how it goes. So I think you're right thus far, but I'm still out here on Bogey Island, bro. I'm still sitting here saying he's going to start getting hot.
I know there's not going to be a bigger fan in the world than you if Bojan Bogdanović does have that game where he goes nuclear, or he hits like four threes in a quarter and drops 20 points and is the difference maker. Let me ask you this, Pete, to kind of bring it back full circle here as we look forward to game three. Jalen Brunson came back in with what, 8 minutes left? And the Sixers went on an 18-6 run. And I think Brunson missed six consecutive shots. Uh-huh. Is there a world where Jalen Brunson is not closing game three, where he's on the bench for the final minutes of game three? Is there a world where that happens?
There is not a world where Jalen Brunson doesn't close the game. It's just not going to happen. And the only way I see it happening is if he's playing so bad and continues to force. And then when McBride and DiVincenzo are in, they are just so hot. They would have to be on fire for Tibbs to not bring him back in. So I can't see it happening, but that would be the only way. If McBride and Devo are on like a 14-0 run, Tibbs has to see what happens, and he has to wait for that the other shoe to drop. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I think he's a smart enough player here. He's going to keep taking his shots, but I think he's going to be a little bit more of a facilitator at some point in this game or next game if he's not starting to hit shots. So no, I don't think that's going to happen, but the slight 1% chance means that the team's doing well. That's my thing. If the team's doing well and he's on the bench, Tibbs may say, hey, just relax for a little bit. But otherwise, it's not happening.
I also think there could be not if he's having a poor game offensively. Like, let's say he's a little bit better in game three. But mm-hmm. he, you know, he's not like tonight. Like
40% from the field.
Everybody's opinion. Yeah, everybody's opinion. And I think like the right take to have was Brunson cost the Knicks this game if they lost. That mm-hmm. was that would have been probably the 100% appropriate take to have. Is there a chance that if he's playing a little bit better offensively, but Maxey is having an all-time game, is there a chance that Brunson finishes the game on the bench and that Deuce McBride is in there solely to stop Tyrese Maxey?
Maybe a little offense-defense switcheroo. I could see that for sure. I could see there being possessions where he's out. That's possible. You know, get to the free throw line, switch out Brunson, and then a possession or two happens. So yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it is more possible than I'm letting on, because that scenario can take place. Maxey going wild, Brunson in foul trouble maybe, or Brunson, you know, just not hitting shots anyway. So you're like, all right, let's go offense, defense here. And you let the possessions roll for a minute or for 45 seconds, perhaps. I think that's possible as well. And Deuce, man, he grinds so hard on defense. It's hard to even, you know, criticize him. I thought we saw Anunoby on Maxey a little bit. He looked fine there. He looked comfortable enough chasing around Maxey. He looked comfortable enough chasing around Kyle Lowry, who doesn't really do much off the dribble anyway, but nonetheless. So I think that would be another scenario where Brunson isn't on the court for every second of the final 4 minutes, where they're switching offense defense.
We saw a lot of OG on Embiid in game one. I don't remember seeing a whole lot of that in game two tonight. It was mostly Hartenstein and Mitch on Embiid.
To get a little like more in the XOs of it all, I guess, I felt like they were putting Anunoby on Lowry and on Maxey to try to just make the switches more reasonable. So then, all right, you got Mitch and Hartenstein. They can at least make a shot difficult for Maxey or Lowry. And now Anunoby switch on to Embiid, which I think makes the Sixers game plan a little bit more challenging as well. So maybe that was part of the strategy. And I got to say, man, to go back to Tom Thibodeau, and I saw that players poll that came out again, like Thibodeau voted the coach least wanted to play for out of any coach in the league for the third time on three different teams. And Josh Hart was like, y'all are soft. If you don't want to play for him, y'all are just soft. And that's what it comes down to. And they play real defense. They implement real strategies consistently, not just in the playoffs, like all year long. You're seeing it all the time where they are doing things specifically to thwart the opponent's offense. You watch other teams, you just don't see it. You see athletes guarding athletes, and some athletes are good at it and some aren't. And the Knicks played defense as a team with strategy and et cetera. And that looked like a change from game one, Pat. It's a good call out because he was on him head to head more in game one, but he ended up on him in these little switches, or he got around the screen so he didn't have to switch on Lowry or Maxey. And I think that's interesting because you almost have like a secret weapon if Anunoby's in and around the paint when the ball gets dumped to Embiid in the post. Like, he's right there, a lot of length, put Embiid in those double teams where he tends to struggle.
I'm ready for game three, dude.
Let's go. I do got to say this though. Shout out to Amanda because I watch so much Knicks. She's obviously just like around when the Knicks are on quite a bit. And that's my, fiance for anyone out there who's like, what's an Amanda? She always been joking this entire year, and she just calls Brunson the ball hog. And it's funny because when she first did it, it was like a string of possessions where he had missed like five shots in a row. He didn't pass the ball. He took a couple fadeaways that when they don't go in, they look ugly. And she's like, what's this guy's deal? Like, why is he such a ball hog? And I'm like, well, he's kind of the best player on the team. One of the best offensive players in the league this year. And she's like, I don't care. Like, he needs to pass more. So now Brunson has been called the ball hog in my house for the most part. And it's so funny. And like, that almost triggered my take here going into halftime. I'm like, he is being a bit of a ball hog. He is being the Randall that we complained about for the playoffs in the past, right? Like, he's doing the same stuff and it's not working. Do something different, right? And I think Amanda will be proven right if he doesn't change. If he has another, two performances where he's like 10 for 28, it's like, bro, it ain't working. Do something else, right? Because he has those tendencies, and no Knicks fans have been mad about it because of how successful he's been. But he has those tendencies. he is a bit of a ball stopper occasionally. He's just been so damn good, it hasn't mattered. So I'm going to be interested to see if he is not hitting his shots, if he changes the approach a little bit.
How about Amanda getting some good burn here on the pod? Is this a thing where she's talking about, hey, babe, like, give me a mention on the podcast. You know, me through all these Knicks games. Give me a mention. Give me a name drop.
She slept through the fourth quarter, man. She ain't got nothing. She wouldn't even know how to find Subway Sports Talk on a podcast app, man. She don't know nothing. She was like, nah, no way. And God forbid she turned it on just to see what was going on. There ain't no way she making it 45 minutes deep.
Okay, fair point.
No
fair
way.
Point. You could just clip that one part and be like, babe, you got your name drop.
Look at that. You may send it to her tomorrow. But no, it was funny because she was sleeping. My dog was like gnawing on a bone in the corner, like finally like calming down for the night. And I'm sitting there on the edge of my seat as things are happening. Now I'm standing up for the final minute of the game. I'm just standing there like whisper screaming, like, let's go, let's go. Like shaking my arms around. I'm like trying not to wake anybody up. And yeah, that was fun. Interesting way to watch a game.
Tough spot for you, bro. The ultimate tough spot. You don't want to wake up the fiance. Your dog Shay is an absolute animal dog lover.
Literally a dog and an animal.
Both of those things. Like she would do great on the Knicks, but like I can only imagine if you start getting fired up, she starts barking, she starts going nuts. Now she's all riled up. She thinks like action is supposed to be happening. Like the dog brain like can't handle that without then getting fired up themselves. My old roommate Jesse and his dog like the same way. Like you show emotion, he just starts going nuts. So. That's a,
he's like, yo, what's up? What are we doing?
That is a tough spot for you, where that is the most unbelievable sequence of Knicks basketball I've ever witnessed. And you have to whisper fired up through it. That's crazy, because I literally almost lost my voice on that sequence where Brunson hits the three, Hartenstein the offensive rebound, the second chance, DiVincenzo hits the three to put him up. You get a double bang from Breen. I can't imagine if I couldn't scream my lungs out during that sequence. So shout out to you.
Yeah, I tried my best. You know, who's to say how successful I was, but I definitely did my best out here. And, you know, you ever seen The Town?
Of course.
You know, Ben Affleck goes to Jeremy Renner's character. He's like, I need you to do something with me, but you can't ask what it is and you can't ask where we're going or whatever.
But
that whole line. He's like,
people.
He's like, hey, well, we're going to hurt some people. And he's like, whose car are we taking? But that's literally dogs. They don't even need to know a detail. They just see your energy and they're like, yeah, I'm in, baby. Let's go.
I will say this here before we wrap up. You know, you mentioned Brunson and Amanda gets her shout out and how he was, you know, he's been a ball hog at times and he could be the ball stopper that a lot of people piled on Randall for. You want to have that mix of where if he doesn't have it, it's okay. Somebody else needs to, you know, drive the car, which Josh Hart did. Brunson has been so freaking unbelievable for this team this year. You want him to be able to have the chance to shoot himself into a rhythm, but he has shot himself totally out of a rhythm and out of confidence here these last two games.
He's got to stay aggressive.
Yeah,
you're right.
Do you want him to be aggressive or do you want him to have kind of a short leash in game three where if he's, let's say, 2 for 9 at the half, but he's got 10 points because he's got to the free throw line, you know, 5, 6 times, you know, what does Tibbs say to him? What do we say as fans going into the third quarter?
It's all about opportunity because like I think about Luka Doncic, right? And I think about LeBron James and you think about even like a SGA at this point right now, the way that they play offense is the right play gets made. And it's been to LeBron's detriment at points in his career. Luka Doncic had a game, he scored 71. And if you watch the fourth quarter, he had like 6 assists in that fourth quarter as well because he just kept making the right play. And I think there were opportunities for Brunson in this game where guys were open, like swing that a little sooner, find Hartenstein and Mitch in the paint and give them a chance. Cause especially Hartenstein was finishing those. It's all about making the read and making the right pass is still being aggressive in my opinion. So your aggression has to stay the same. I still want to see 20 plus shots out of Jalen Brunson. Like I don't want to see him now, you know, go 4 for 11. Absolutely not. So I think that's a great clarification. Question by you there, because if he all of a sudden went 4 for 11 and was super passive, no, that's not what we want. You need him attacking the rim. You need him getting to the free throw line. And clearly he still hit 7 free throws this game and had 24 points in a terrible shooting game for him. So the aggression must remain, but some of that aggression can be turned into opportunities for others. It's making the right play at all costs almost for him. That's how I look at it. Patty B. Pat freaking Boyle. I think you said you were still like feeling the energy when we started the pod. Ain't nothing matching the energy as your Islanders Knicks little video on Twitter, bruh. That was epic.
Sports gods giveth, the sports gods taketh away. I didn't have much hope or give the Islanders much of a chance to win this series in the first place. So if the Islanders blowing a 3-0 lead, playing like the assholes that they are, and having a 3-1 lead with, what, 3 minutes left, and then watching the Hurricanes dump 4 pucks into the net in the final 2 minutes of the game, 2 and 10 seconds to take the lead. If that means that we were able to have an 8-0 run over the final 27 seconds for the Knicks, I will live with it.
So be it. So be it. Pat Boyle, a legend of his own right. Pat Boyle, 44.
But yeah,
Twitter.
Put those 5 minutes in real time where the Knicks win it and then the Islanders give up 2 goals in 10 seconds, literally like 3 minutes later. Those 5 minutes are on my tombstone for when I die, because I don't know if my heart will ever beat properly again after that. Complete euphoria, snatching victory from the jaws of defeat, followed by snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. An unbelievable 5 minutes, and I was not going to let the Islanders ruin what has become one of the greatest nights of my Knicks fandom of my entire life.
Profound. Giveth and taketh away. Pat Boyle, 44, on Twitter, on BetQL every Sunday. Check the reels on BetQL's Instagram. I think it's BetQL app is the handle for that. It's actually a great account to follow, especially if you're like me and Pat and are a degenerate and like to gamble. It's a great app, and you get a lot of takes and a lot of great stuff from a lot of different creators, which is fantastic as well. Every Sunday, though, with Sean Marash, Pat Boyle, 44, on BetQL. You're the man, Pat. I appreciate you. Do you have one little itty tidbit for NFL draft on Thursday? Because I keep forgetting it's actually happening in the midst of this Knicks playoff run.
No J.J. McCarthy to the Giants, and I will be happy. Yeah, I will be happy with the Giants if they do not draft J.J. McCarthy. And I'll say this, Pete. Speaking of betting, game 3, you heard me say it before, Dante DiVincenzo, over threes, alternate threes, alternate points, or if you think Pete Kennedy is going to have a big night in terms of calling his shot, take Bogdanovich over threes, alternate points, alternate threes. One of those guys is going to have a monster night. I think it's DiVincenzo.
I love it. I'm tapping in on the Dante bet on Thursday for sure. And I'll also throw a shekel on Bojan because I've done it game 1 and game 2. He's 1-1. How you doing? Actually, I think he hit his over-under was 1.5. So he hit his over 2 games in a row. Shout out. But he didn't hit his points over in game 2. That was it. All right, Pat Boyle, Subway Sports Talk. Thank you so much, brother. As always, a great episode talking Knicks hoops and Sixers hoops. The series ain't over, boys and girls, for that matter, if Amanda's listening. But it's not over. Going to Philly. A lot of battles left to be had. We can't count this as a victory just yet. We'll be back covering it all right here on Subway Sports Talk amongst the NFL draft and some baseball talk. We'll get back to it as well. Just too much more exciting stuff going on as the Mets and Yankees both play pretty damn well. That's all we got. Subway Sports Talk, Pete Kennedy, Pat Boyle. Hit us on socials at Subway Sports Talk, on your podcast app, Apple, Spotify, or on YouTube. Cheers.